I'd like to call the meeting to order. And we have closed session that is just adjourned, and we're returning now to the chambers and closed session. Do we have any report from our city attorney?
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. We'll begin our regular session. Let's go ahead with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Councilmember Moreno.
Please join me in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Here.
And Mayor O'Malley is absent.
Thank you. And yes, I do need to report out that Mayor O'Malley had a knee operation this week and is still out recuperating, and we wish him all the best in his speedy recovery. Our first item is approval of the agenda. Is there anybody that would like to, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Seconded.
Been moved by Councilmember Sturdivant, seconded by Councilmember Burbo. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo.
Here. Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am. However, don't you need to do the waive the reading in full to mention that as part of this?
Yes. Okay. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on tonight's agenda.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
And Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes, thank you.
4-0 motion passes.
Thank you. And we have a presentation tonight. It's a proclamation recognizing April 2017 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, when we should have Lisa Fraser of the Center for Family Strengthening, who will be here tonight. And I think I'm going to have our Councilmember Burbo read the proclamation first, and then we'll let you speak, Lisa, if that's all right.
Thank you. Proclamation by the City Council of the City of Atascadero proclaiming April 2017 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Whereas the Atascadero City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity to learn, that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas April, the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, marks a time to recognize our community's children as precious assets, that the quality of their early years is our collective responsibility, and that we commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment. Whereas Friday, April 7th, 2017, has been named a countywide Wear Blue Day to raise awareness about the many children in our midst who suffer daily from abuse and neglect, and to pledge support for strategies that strengthen families and protect our young ones. And whereas Saturday, April 8th, 2017, will commemorate the Day of the Child at the 39th Annual Children's Day in the Plaza Celebration from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza. And whereas a variety of other events honoring the Month of the Child will provide an opportunity to acknowledge the dedication of individuals and organizations to improve the lives of children and youth in our county. Now, therefore, be it known that the City Council of the City of Atascadero hereby proclaims April 2017 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 8th, 2017 as the Day of the Child.
Thank you. Very nicely done. Lisa, would you like to address the council?
Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to introduce myself. And I have a little entourage here that's going to share some bags with you this evening. Currently, I serve as the director of Center for Family Strengthening. We are the County of San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention Council. We have been in this role since 1987, and we work with our community to continue to provide a numerous prevention education activities throughout this county, and one of these activities is working with my colleagues here from the Child Care Planning Council to promote Child Abuse Prevention Month in April and also Month of the Child. Recently, in July of 2016, I want you to know that I started serving as the executive director for another local nonprofit called the link here in Atascadero. We're right here on Morrow Road. We're right next door to McDonald's. And we are serving all of the Atascadero schools with a team of 8 family advocates whose primary duties are working with families that are identified by our school staff to prevent any kind of escalating issues in their school years. Also, I would like to share with you that we are working with the City of Atascadero to host Children's Day in the Park on April 22nd. Hi, Terry. We used to host this event in May, but the Friends of the Lake at Atascadero wanted to switch a date, and so we were willing to move our date, and we are hosting that on April 22nd, and we'll continue to hopefully do that in April going forward to promote Child Abuse Prevention Month and Month of the Child. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. And we'd like to present you with this, and we'd like you to come on up and take your picture. Thank you for coming. And for those that don't know what's in these bags, not only is there lots of information, but we got Frisbee. So, you know, if things get too boring, we know what to do. Okay, back to work. The first item on our agenda now is the consent calendar. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, I'll move it to the council. Anyone like to pull any items?
I don't want to pull an item, but I did just want to note in the minutes of last meeting under the subject of the CDBG grants, it indicated there were no ex parte communications, and I did specifically mention that I had a discussion on that topic with Mr. Tim Eccles, the president of Loaves and Fishes.
Very good. And I understand that's been amended. Is that correct, Laura? Yes.
Similarly, something that I had mentioned, was that taking care of my EBC announcement? Okay, thank you.
Okay, do I have a motion for approval? Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, we're going to make a change on item B1 on page 4. We incorrectly reflected staff's changes to the ordinance. It said it should read 903.25. Additions exceed 10% and total combined floor area will exceed 3,000 square feet. That's how the staff changes were announced at the meeting, but in the minutes they're not reflected that way. So we're going to make that change, and the ordinance will correctly reflect.
Can you say that one more time, Laura?
Sure. Under B1 for Title IV safety, it'll say 903.25 should read on A, additions exceed 10% and total combined floor area will exceed 3,000 square feet.
Okay.
And then it'll go into B.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. And just so the public knows, this is an amendment to the building code that we're talking about from a previous meeting in the agenda and minutes. So do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Move awesome. Approval.
I think I heard Mr. Burbo, seconded by Ms. Moreno. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you, Laura. And next is our update from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I wanted to talk to you tonight about Ensenada Avenue and Atascadero Creek update. I'm very happy to report that slope improvements have been made and that the work is completed. All that remains is to add seeding and spreading of straw to stabilize the soil. Willows will also be planted here this week. As you know, this was the house that had some problems with the creek bank during the storms. The creek bank had eroded away and threatened the house. We had to red tag the house, and the Shadacks were forced to leave the house. A lot of the community pitched in at that time to help them move their belongings out of the house. Red Cross came in to help them find temporary shelter. Clay Septic helped pump their septic. The water company offered storage. There were a lot of people that came in to help during the storm. And Michael Frederick's Paving Corporation volunteered to fix the creek bank for them. They provided all labor, equipment, materials to reconstruct the creek embankment with imported boulders and backfill. Midcoast Geotechnical volunteered to observe the construction, test the materials to ensure that the property would be completely safe to return to. So the city worked with Leonard Sutherman of Michael Frederick's Construction and Dane Jensen of Midcoast Geotechnical to ensure that any and all necessary permits were quickly expedited, which included helping to ensure that emergency permits were cleared through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and Army Corps of Engineers. The value of the services, which have been offered free of charge by these very generous local businesses, including all of the materials, construction, and professional services, is estimated to be worth more than $50,000. So a huge thank you to these businesses that helped out a community member in need. And thank you to all of the volunteers that have helped make this project possible. There's just a couple of more pictures. The Art and Wine Tour was last Friday evening. It was a busy Friday evening. Despite the rain on Friday evening for the Art and Wine Tour, we had a phenomenal attendance with over 121 people purchasing tickets. We guesstimate that approximately 200 were in attendance throughout the downtown. Those who attended enjoyed the 16 winery, tours of Historic City Hall, and Fire Station 1, and a variety of merchants and restaurants were enjoyed throughout the evening. So the next event is Friday, May 12th. So if you missed this one or were intimidated by the rain, put May 12th on your calendar. That'll be our next art and wine tour. And this is huge news. I know I brought it up last week or 2 weeks ago, but we're very excited that Farmers Market is going to be returning to the downtown. We're reminding everyone that Farmers Market is coming back to the Sunken Gardens beginning Wednesday, April 5th. We have a grand opening celebration with food, music, and, of course, produce and other goods. to welcome our farmers back to downtown location. They'll be located on East Mall between El Camino Real and Palma Avenue. The market's decision to return to the Sunken Gardens is welcomed by our downtown merchants, and families may find the location very convenient for stopping in for fresh dinner items as they pick up their children from school. After April 5th, Farmers Market will be held at the Sunken Gardens every Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 6. So please, please come support our Farmers Market. We're excited to have them here in the downtown. I'm personally excited because I can scooch out maybe for a few minutes and grab some amazing produce and partake of everything that they have to offer. So it'll be a fun ceremony. I know that Terry's been working on some entertainment, such as the show choir and bands and other things, to really make the farmers market know how much we appreciate their moving downtown. Another fun event is coming up, and tickets will go on sale on April 1st. This is our third annual Brew at the Zoo event. The tickets go on sale this Saturday, and you can purchase your tickets online at visitatascadero.com/brewatthezoo or at the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce or at the zoo. There are a limited number of tickets. There's a lot of interest in this event. Those of us that attended last year are certainly planning on returning. It's a wonderful event with entertainment, beer, and, of course, the stars of the show, the zoo animals. It'll take place on Saturday, April 29th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m., and we'll have a dancing contest and karaoke, too, and zoo educators will be showcasing a variety of animals as you stroll through your surrounding. Proceeds from this event support our conservation and education efforts. A variety of food, T-shirts, and gift items from the zoo's gift shop will be available for purchase. So come party with the animals this year on April 29th. We also have the 8th Annual Conservation Celebration. It'll be held at the Charles Paddock Zoo on Saturday, April 8th from 10 to 2 p.m., and it's free with regular zoo admission. This party for the planet will highlight workshops geared for adults on topics like beekeeping, food waste, recycling, and water conservation. There will be a variety of activities to enjoy, including animal charades, presentations, fun with giant bubbles, soil planting, an education station, and face painting. We'll also have zoo educators there talking about the animal, various animals, specifically some of our species survival program animals and some of the animals that are critically endangered in the wild. We'd like to keep everyone to check out a variety of workshops from beekeeping to gray water conservation to using native plants. There is literally something for everyone there. It's an interesting day at the zoo. And we also have Spring Fest. So April's a very busy month for the zoo. Our annual Spring Festival will begin Sunday, April 9th, and it will go through Sunday, go through April 23rd. Come out and enjoy our baby farm animals, from chicks to bunnies to goats. This year we have a mama goat and two of her babies, so they'll all be there. It's free with regular zoo admission, and hours are 10 to 5 p.m., for the Spring Fest, and those are the regular zoo hours. Yes.
The flyer up there actually has a different. It has the 8th from 10 to 2. So that's the other one?
That's the conservation celebration.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, oh, okay.
There we go.
Okay.
I just need to click one more time.
I didn't want anyone to see that and be confused as they're hearing. And okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Councilmember Moreno. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes. On the farmer's market, it's from 3 to 5, but the ribbon cutting for the move is at 3:30, is that correct?
Correct.
And
3 to 6.
Okay, but the ribbon cutting is at 3:30.
The ribbon cutting is at 3:30. Okay. The farmer's market is actually from 3 to 6.
Right. And given that 3 is when, you know, all the kids are, you know, they're wandering by and parents are still in pickup mode, is there going to be any signage the first couple of weeks or anything, let people know about this?
Yes, and we have been coordinating with the schools, trying to get the word out to drivers. We're actually hoping that some people will be taking advantage while you're picking up your children. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and enjoy the farmer's market. Do a little shopping before you leave town. So,
the participants in the farmer's market know that that's not the time they're going to be unloading their stuff.
Yes.
Blocking traffic on West Mall and stuff like that.
There was a very close coordination with both the farmer's market and the school district, trying to figure out the optimal start time for the farmer's market to first make it convenient for their shoppers to be there, obviously ensuring safety and access and make sure we don't have gridlock. All of that has been taken into account.
Got it. Thank you.
I was wondering if you wanted to announce the Eagle Ranch Educational Forum that's coming up this week.
Yes, we have an Eagle Ranch Educational Forum tomorrow at the Pavilion from 4 to 6 p.m., and then we will have the public hearing for Eagle Ranch, and this is where you're going to give, for those interested in giving testimony regarding the environmental impact report. This is a formal hearing. If you really have a lot of questions about Eagle Ranch and want to learn more, I encourage you to go to the educational forum. That'll give you an opportunity to meet with staff members and the developers, get your questions answered in a smaller, more intimate setting. If you have some comments that you want to get into the record regarding Eagle Ranch EIR, please, please show up on Thursday, and that's going to be here at 6:30 until it ends. Each participant will be given their 3 minutes to give the public testimony. You can also submit written comments in other ways, but this will be the formal public hearing for that. I imagine that when we have other additional educational opportunities, probably one after the hearing, because we won't be answering a lot of questions. We'll be going through some of the process and the overview of the EIR process, but not a ton of time on the project itself. So there might be some questions that come up as part of that where people can go to another educational hearing, educational forum with that. Is there anything you wanted to add, Phil?
I think you covered it very well. Thank you.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks so much. Uh-huh. I just wanted to say, since I'm acting as mayor, how proud I am of the citizens of Atascadero for stepping up to help the Shade Acts. This was a phenomenal endeavor that those who were involved in it should be very proud. We appreciate them very much. If you consider the monetary amount, not to count the time, which of course is significant also, $50,000 contribution to help an elderly couple to move back into their home is quite remarkable for a city. Thank you. And let's move on to community forum, which is reserved for persons wanting to address the city council on any matter not on the agenda and over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We have turned the sound on the timer to assist speakers in knowing when their time is up. If you want to speak, please approach the podium and state your name for the record before making your comments. We're kind of sparse here tonight. Is there anyone who'd like to address us? Seeing none, I'm going to close the community forum portion of the meeting and move on to our public hearings. Our first item is sign ordinance updates. And let's start from my left to the right. Is there any ex parte communications?
No, other than with staff.
None for me?
No.
Very good. Staff report will be by Phil Dunsmore. Thank you.
Good evening, Council, and thank you, Vice Mayor. So it was last September that we did the extensive overhaul of the sign regulations, and at that time we knew we would come back and revisit the issue of murals. And while doing that, while looking into the mural issue, we also had our legal team, our city attorney team, evaluate several other components of the sign regulations, specifically looking back at case law that has changed some recent trends in developing regulations, and looking at how we can also just make everything in there a little more easier to read, a little more legible. So that's what this amendment is tonight. It's essentially doing a little bit of cleanup and making sure all of our legalese, I'll call it, is accurate in the ordinance, and at the same time addressing the issue that we wanted to pull out, which was making sure we didn't have an overlap in the regulations between what murals are and what a commercial sign message is. So I'm just going to go through real briefly some of those amendments that you have before you. Again, it was September of last year that we did the overhaul and the complete approval of the new regulations, and those questions popped up. Our legal team did spend a good amount of time really combing through this and finding every little possible thing to make this thing very strong. We just recently brought this forward to the Planning Commission. They recommended approval of what you have before you tonight, and they did not have any suggested edits at that time. So one of the main things that we have right up front is just the addition of new findings, and that really strengthens the whole support for the regulations. And I'm just going to throw it up on the screen. We don't have to go through this, but in case you had questions about it, I wanted to have the text available. And this is essentially a list of findings that we added up front in the regulations just to really give a framework to the intent. Then the additional amendment in here was to clean up the language on prohibited signs. And primarily what we did here is we found out we had a little bit of duplication about what was in the ordinance and what we had in our definitions. So we tried to eliminate that overlap by keeping everything in the definitions and keeping the actual language in the code as simple as possible. So what you're seeing here is a shift to remove that duplication. No changes to the intent of the code, no changes to what you can and can't do in terms of signs, but again, just a little further clarification and cleanup. Now, the one change that we do have in here is a little bit of clarification, and this is based on case law in the past, on signage in a maximum area, and there's a little bit of a change there in this particular section, and it's associated with the signs that we see in residential districts, the real estate signs, and non-commercial message signs. And there's, it turned out there was some case law that pertained specifically to these issues that we had to conform with. Now, here's really the whole reason we came forward, which is really pulling out murals from the sign code. Murals are something that we don't regulate as signage. Murals are something that do require an administrative use permit. With that use permit, we don't look at essentially the artistic qualities of the mural, but what we would look at is it a commercial message or is it not? So we wanted to make that clear in here. What the sign regulations do is look at signs. And so instead of having art and mural in there, we wanted to make sure that what we're looking at is actually a painted wall sign. That's what these sign regulations would govern. And we wanted to make sure we had standards for doing that. And essentially, a painted wall sign is actually a really nice thing because it's something that doesn't require an actual construction permit. It does require our review to make sure it fits the size standards and it's in the right location, et cetera. But because it's not building something, it's simply painting something, it's probably one of the easiest signs that you can construct. So really what this does is differentiate the difference between a painted wall sign and a mural. We don't even talk about murals, but separately, murals are, again, a whole separate item that requires that administrative use permit approval. And lastly, we did put in here some additional information on an appeals process, and this again was another legal recommendation that we have in here. And so we did write out how the appeal process works. And that's the other, probably the most significant amendment beyond the discussion on murals. And that's really about it in terms of that recommendation. We do have alternatives. Obviously, we can modify at text if you like. We can determine there might be more information needed, or we can revisit the entire matter altogether. But tonight, we're going to leave you with a recommendation that the Planning Commission left you with, which is to introduce the draft ordinance for first reading by title only, which would amend the municipal code with these legal suggested amendments. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dunsmore. Is there any questions? Mr.
Yes,
Burbeau.
Of course.
Mr. Renner?
Mr. Dunsmore, a couple of questions. Make sure I understand. So we're going to talk about murals in a separate section at another point in time. So a painted wall sign is one that does contain a commercial message and therefore is subject to the sign ordinance, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then, but we do list murals under the little matrix on page 107 of our agenda as requiring an administrative use permit. But we kind of deleted definitions of murals. Is that because we're going to add it some in another section at another time?
Yes, and I think we already have something somewhere else in our Muni code that defines that, do we not? I think what we had chosen to do is really, if we wanted to get into that mural discussion, open that sort of, I'll call it can of worms later. So, yeah, right. We don't currently want to elaborate on that.
Okay. So the only mention really is just that in this matrix it says murals require an AUP.
That's right.
Okay. The other question I had is, you know, we talk about freeway-oriented signs and such, but what about billboards? Are those governed separately somewhere? I didn't see any mention. Maybe I just missed it in reading through.
They are a whole separate animal, really, and there's a whole different governing section that relates to that. So we don't have those documented in our own sign ordinance. They're a different thing, and okay. They have different state regulations and federal regulations that govern.
Okay, so we don't really have any local regulation. We just follow whatever the federal and state guidelines are?
Well, we do have a prohibition on them, and so what we have out there is essentially existing nonconforming.
Okay, so we do not allow new billboards in the city
Correct.
Of Atascadero, but we have no – we're going to live with the ones we've got.
That's right.
In effect. Okay, gotcha. And then last question really is not about the ordinance itself, but it's about the fees for sign permits. When the council last addressed this, continued the lower rate for the temporary lower rate for sign permits, I think down to $50 or something. How long is that extension for?
We're still doing that now, and I think we said we'd do that for an additional year. 18 months, so I think we have about a year left on that. And that's been met with success, been doing very well. We've been able to really get a lot of compliance with that and really get people to come forward and realize it's not that big a deal to get a sign permit. Painless process.
Right. Well, I think, you know, if we either can continue to keep the rate low, although you know, that may not make sense for large signs. So when we get to that point, it's something we'll need to address, but it's not part of the ordinance itself. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Moreno?
I have a question on the sign type number 20, the temporary non-commercial. I'm assuming that this would also include things like political signs.
Yes.
So if there's the issue of, and maybe this is a Brian question, if we have the issue of free speech, then is there some sort of precedent for a maximum of 9 months? How does that get handled?
Well, my understanding is I referred the proposed ordinance to Don Davis in our office, who's one of my partners, and he one of his areas of expertise is signs, and I believe this came back from Don to the city staff, and that's how it ended up here.
Okay, so if, you know, 10 months down the road, someone still has a sign up and there's a complaint, it can be taken down and...
The most likely result there would be to send them a letter.
Right.
Advise them they're in violation.
It's just good for, I think, the public to know that because, you know, people get irritated when their neighbors got signs up for too long or however, but just knowing that there's a legal precedent for that to be legal.
Yes, understood.
Okay, thank you.
You're good? Okay. And just a question regarding the mobile signs. I see most of the language is taken out. Do we have a definition for what the mobile sign is that is different than what has been removed?
No. We actually have a duplicative language in the definitions that are very similar to that.
Okay. Very good. I thought that was the case, but it was gone, so I couldn't tell. And in terms of historical signs, I know we have one that says the bakery on the old bakery building. Is that seen as something different, or is that more
that
the mural?
That sort of fits the category of a mural because it doesn't really serve any commercial purpose, and it is artistic and historic looking.
Very good. Thank you. All right. I'd like to open it up to the public. If anybody would like to speak on the sign ordinance, please approach the podium. Seeing none, I'll close the public portion of the meeting and bring it back for a vote. Motion, please.
I'll move approval that we introduce draft ordinance A for first reading by title only, amending the Atascadero Municipal Code by approving PLN 2016-1608, ZCH 2016-0182, Title IX Zoning Ordinance Code Text Amendments.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Moreno, second by Mr. Sturdivant. Roll call vote, please.
So really quick, let me just read that title again.
So is it unhelpful if I ever read it?
Or no, any of us it's
ever
fine.
Read it? Oh, okay.
We just say that I'll read it. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We right. said.
Okay. I'm just trying to help you out.
Yeah,
okay.
I appreciate that. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending the Atascadero Municipal Code by approving PLN 2016-1608, ZCH 2016-0182, Title IX Zoning Ordinance Code Text Amendments.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes. Thank you, Laura.
Motion passes 4-0.
All right. Item C1 is the General Plan and Housing Element Annual Progress Report for 2016. And this, again, will be Community Development Director Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Vice Mayor and Council. This is an item that we always sort of enjoy presenting to you. It's sort of our annual update. It not only includes the housing numbers, but also includes just a general analysis of what the city's been doing in terms of meeting our action plan goals, meeting our general plan policies, and where they are. It's sort of a status report that we like to give out every year. We also utilize this to satisfy the housing and community development requirements and the requirements from the Office of Planning and Research. As you probably know, the state does require us to file an annual report, which includes those housing numbers and the general plan numbers, and we also utilize it to monitor where are we going as a city, what's the health of our city, what's the health of our general plan, and what are the general numbers of development and housing units and the like. It really gives us kind of what we call just a check-in of all the development activities that the city is working on. And it also gives us a chance to look at what were our goals and you know, are we aligned, is our general plan aligned with those goals and our goals aligned with the general plan, and are we generally moving forward in that direction? So from the development side, we had a number of things that we were working on from the community development side, and looking at the commercial hotspots, looking at economic development and building the partnerships and alliances, really looking at trying to streamline our ordinances and doing common sense reform, and that's what we did with the zoning activities that we did last year, and also looking at how can we meet our affordable housing requirements and satisfy the regional housing needs assessment. And what we're continuing to do is looking at increasing the aesthetics of our primary commercial corridor, the El Camino Real. We're still waiting right now to hear back as to whether we're going to get the grant that we had applied for through Caltrans. We're supposed to find out in the next couple of weeks of whether we're successful. It's supposed to occur somewhere in early April. And then, again, further permit streamlining. What can we do through the building and planning entitlement process to make that process more palatable, easier? Those are some of the key features that we really continue to strive towards. I want to give you just a quick overview of the numbers of permits, and I think this is in your report as well. 2016 was definitely picking up a little more than 2015. This chart here shows us the number of inspections that we did last year, and it's calendar year. Number of applications we received, and that's building permit applications, which is the 1,295 number. And the number of actual permits that we completed, which is finaled. In other words, we gave a final inspection to them, we signed them off. That was the 842 number. And that includes the full range, residential, commercial, whole new building, or even just an addition or a remodel. And then we also give you some statistics on what was the valuation of those projects. That means basically what was the whole value of the projects, what did they cost that project to be developed, and we utilize the valuation as a process to be able to basically determine the building permit fees, and it also gives us an indicator of, you know, what's the true value of things that are being constructed in town. And in the end, of course, there's the actual number of permits that were actually issued. which is that 1,103 number. So looking at it in sort of a linear fashion in terms of over the years, 2016 is reaching that historic peak. Since 2015, we're seeing about a 22% increase in applications received, about a 32% increase in the actual permits that are issued. And I think we're seeing those same trends this year, too. We'll see when we report this to you next year where things are. And that's where we look at, on the planning side, it kind of gives us an indication of where we might be next year with the building side. And the planning side, too, we're seeing quite a bit of activity. In 2016, there was about 79 applications for various things. That could be something as simple as an accessory structure, or it could be something more complex like a rezoning of a property. About 120 housing units, and that was 2016. We're seeing quite a few of those also this year. About three zone changes and six of the major long-range planning efforts that came through, and that would be things like a rezoning of a property, such as the some of the residential projects we've seen around town, looking at things like the La Plaza project that came in, updating the zoning handbook, things like that. These are major long-range planning projects. So what we saw in 2016, the application rate was remaining steady. We really only had one general plan amendment, a map change. A lot more of the administrative use permit applications, and that's partly due to because of the sign permitting changes that we did. That's where we're seeing a lot of that. And we're also seeing that as because that's part of our effort to streamline things, is bring down a lot of these entitlements to a lower level, not having to bring things to the Planning Commission. So what we saw is 2016 was a pretty good year. A lot of stuff happening. Generally, the value of those projects were up. The residential unit count was up. We're getting really close to meeting our regional housing needs assessment targets, even though we're still a couple of years out from finishing that cycle. We still have a few more of our very low and low and units to get. Those are always really hard for any city to get those in. We're definitely above expectations on our moderate level of affordable housing and way above expectations just on our regular housing numbers. And in fact, what I'm going to have is I'm going to have Alfredo kind of share with you in depth some of those housing number statistics and some of that information from that end.
Good evening. So again, as Phil alluded to, you know, our building valuation continues to inch up. In 2014, we had sort of that oddball year, but it goes up from 2015 to 2016. So what that is an indicator. It's a very healthy economic indicator of construction with here in the city. We also did have a significant number of major non-residential developments that were under construction. A couple of those just finished up. Nardoni's is a good example. I believe it's listed here as under construction. The back patio is still under construction, but the interior and the actual restaurant operation is now open. So, again, this just was listed out what was going on in terms of our non-residential construction here in the city. As Phil mentioned, we continue to grow. Atascadero continues to grow since our 2010 census. So a major source of our building valuation does come from new residential units. And again, we are meeting our regional housing forecasts for all income levels, not just the moderates and above moderates, but also those very low and low income units, which are really hard to produce. Again, a snapshot into where we're at. In 2010, the census had us at 11,505 units. We're now at 12,214 units. So we have had a population increase because of that. So those are the percentages right there on the screen for you. So we at census day, which is April 1st, we were 28,310. Now we're about that 30,000 threshold, and we continue to add new residents to the community. Again, we did issue 120 building permits. Building permits for new residential units. That is a 26% increase from 2015. Of those, the percentage were dedicated to very low and low-income families. 83% of all new units were considered affordable workforce housing units, so those are those in the moderate, very low, and low-income range. Just a snapshot of where major residential projects under construction. The Atascadero Triangle, that was 11 units, just recently completed, and families just moved into those about a few weeks ago. Construction is going strong over at Avenida Maria. The Knolls at the Avenida is the project name that they're going to, you know, be known as from here on out. So they're constructing 60 units there. We had 4 units under construction for Amapoa Condos. Woodridge up in the Las Lomas, they are constructing 20 units, and all those were deemed based affordable moderate units based on sales price. And then one of our larger for sale developments, Oak Haven Village, that actually has now finished up. So construction is completed. There are maybe a few units there for sale, but as of now, it's a completely closed out project. So RENA stands for Regional Housing Needs Allocation. It is distributed by SLOCOG for each city in the county. So these are considered targets. They're not mandates. So the whole point of RENA is to demonstrate that the city has adequate zones for affordable housing. And our job is to hopefully implement those housing projects and reduce the zoning obstacles. These are all folded into the city's adopted housing element. And then as of this past year, one of the legislative initiatives from Governor Brown is to reward cities who actually meet their RENA goals. And so the governor's office, as a part of their budget, is beginning to roll out and new state initiatives and new programs for additional potential funding for those cities that meet their RENA targets. State, and particularly Governor Brown, has really been aiming on trying to make housing more affordable in the state by reduction of government regulations. And you see that in their new second unit regulations that just went into effect as of this year. So they're really beginning to roll back some of those more cumbersome rules that are in place. So our median income is considered $77,100, and there are 4 income categories for the purpose of RENA. It was very low, low, moderate, and above moderate income. So this gives us an overall snapshot as of 2016 on where we're at. So we are in the what's considered the fifth cycle, or 2014 through 2019, a total of 393 units. We are actually at 393, so we've met our total goal for the cycle, and we're already just now in 2017. We've completely we have about 19 above moderate units left for the cycle. We'll probably meet that pretty handily. We're way above where we need to be on moderates. We're about 252% above that. And then low and very low, we're almost hitting the 50s, and those will continue to bump up, particularly at Avenida Maria, that 60-unit apartment project. That's actually just phase one. There's an additional 24 units that are part of that project, and as soon as they finish up these first 60, they're going to move right along into the next 24 units. So those should bump up as well. And we're actually currently working with People Self-Help Housing for another project that they might pick up known as the Acacias. So we're actually working with them very diligently that they have an application into extended map. So again, that's that public-private partnership that our housing element has really championed that staff do, and we continue to work with those private private entities as well as those nonprofits in the community to create this type of housing that's needed. So we've updated these maps. We did these as a part of the El Camino Real Corridor study, and they seem to be very handy. So we've actually updated them as a part of this effort, and hopefully we'll continue to update them as each year rolls along. And it shows you what's going on. As you can see, the Oak Haven Village has disappeared off the map. So Carriza Road is actually beginning construction now. That's just a 12-unit single-family housing development. It was amended back 2015. We also have the Annex, which is actually part of the Dale Railroad Commercial Area Specific Plan. There were some residential units planned for that, owned by Clint Pierce and his group. They're moving forward. I believe their submittal is coming in the next couple weeks on that. As a part of the Dale Railroad Commercial Area Specific Plan, there's additional 42-unit multifamily development. So that's kind of in limbo now, but it is currently approved for that. Emerald Ridge is actually the largest one on that. That's 204 units. Probably see the building permits and the on-site and public improvements come in the next 3 to 4 weeks on that. We've been really working diligently with the engineers and the architects, so they are definitely moving full steam ahead. In the central area right there, the Acacias is what I just mentioned. People Self-Help Housing is looking at picking up that project. So that's 40 units right there in its current format. And then Colony Square has 62 units available. What's not on the map and what's not showing there is La Plaza. So that currently is now proposing 37 residential units directly in the downtown. But again, that goes through pre-application review and will eventually find its way to City Council sometime this year. On the south end of town is where we see a lot of our construction going on. As mentioned, the Knolls, that's a pretty big construction project going on, as well as Hidden Oaks 2. That was originally an entitled project that's now flipped to construction permits. The Hartenberg project, 75 units, that's going to be going to DRC in, I believe it's slotted for April 13th, and then roll into Planning Commission and City Council this year. Southside Villas actually just wrapped up their building today on their final unit, so those are all complete. The Groves is actually in-house, and we are doing the final plan checking for public improvements and subdivision improvements on that. So quite a lot of construction going on. El Corte is in the same manner, and then also an Artisan Subdivision 6-lot subdivision over off of Atascadero Avenue. So there's a lot of stuff going on in that south end, and we haven't even got to Oak Ridge Estates. People Self-Up Housing, that's been completed. Amapoa Condos, now construction, and then there's Eagle Ranch. It's kind of just laying out there, and that's currently going through its EIR and specific plan process. And then Long Valley 2, that's actually a project that was brought to our attention about 2014. The owners have sat on it for quite some time, but the movement is beginning to go back into actually doing some sort of project out there on quite a bit of land. So that will be a very slow process as it goes along, as they figure out what they actually want to do. And so that'll be something that, not similar to Eagle Ranch, but something that we definitely will shepherd through. The action plan implementation, the whole point of us and what we do on an everyday basis really goes back to your action plan. Our three main areas of focus this past year has really been economic development, common sense reform and regulation. You just saw parts of that today with the sign ordinance, and then environmental stewardship. So our work efforts really revolve around this action plan, and projects that achieve the goals and objectives are given these priorities. So economic development, we worked on the El Camino Real Corridor study that was completed in spring. It was our sort of preliminary springboard. What we found out was that significant vacancies for a space less than 2,500 square feet run up and down the El Camino Real Corridor. However, we have a lack of large greenfield development for job-generating uses. And so you as a city council asked us to go out and further explore. So we laid that groundwork. We applied for a grant in November 2016. The grant was well supported by various agencies. Even Caltrans thought it was kind of slick. So kudos to that. Hopefully we get funded for that. And off we go and running to really, again, lay that groundwork and foundation for really championing our El Camino Real Corridor and making it to what it's supposed to be, and that's our economic hub. The Del Rio Road specific plan, that was one of the largest economic drivers in the city at, during this time, and still is. Walmart has tentatively ceased moving forward at this point, so they're beginning their wrapping up entitlement processing, et cetera. The tentative maps do expire in June 2017, however, they have been discussing staff and extending those maps, and so we are working with them on paths to move forward in terms of keeping those entitlements alive. And then we are working with the annex property owner, now known as the Del Rio Road Marketplace, on phase one and phase two developments. So they have a hotel application in place now. That should be going to DRC soon as we get a resubmittal in. So that's part of their phase one. So we'll be working with them in terms of making things happen in the Del Rio Road commercial area, specific plan, sans Walmart at this point. Colony Square, the L portion of the property, has been officially purchased this past year, and the property owner wants to move forward with that restaurant site. He is working with an architect currently right now, and it is going into tie-in with the new footbridge and plaza, so that is an item for you tonight. So again, the foundation and groundwork laid out back in 2011, 2012, now it's coming to fruition, and hopefully continues to be a good economic driver for the downtown. The La Plaza project, this formerly known as the Hoff property, Hoff Mixed Use, it was approved in 2013. At that time, it was up for sale. Larry Wysong was looking at potentially buying it, but that fell through, and it had some tax probate issues. But at this point, those are all gone. We have a new property owner, and he really is gung-ho about a new vision for this property. So he is envisioning a multi-phase approach stretching from Atascadero Mall to Traffic Way. Very ambitious, but with ambition comes drive, and with drive comes the ability to really secure properties and make it happen. And this property owner is doing a fantastic job in securing properties and really trying to make this development occur. So the DRC is set for 329, which is tomorrow, on a pre-application review. So that means it's an informal review. We as city staff have taken a look at it. We've reviewed it for a couple things that need to get tweaked up in terms of for formal submittal to really streamline this process. And now we want the DRC to really weigh in on the architectural elevations and the proposed site plan for phase one. Once that's complete, they'll go back to their design team, and then we'll more than likely bring it back to DRC with a formal application, Planning Commission, and ultimately City Council. We are really excited about this project. I'm sorry if I sound very monotone, but I'm really trying to withhold my immense excitement for this project, working with Mr. Zappas and RM Design Group and their architectural team. So we're hoping that a lot of synergy and a lot of energy is created by this project, and the property owner is doing a fantastic job. Santa Maria Brewing, there's a lot of stuff going on, and people always ask, what's going on with them? Well, they purchased the Gary Bang building, so it's in their possession. We have actually met with them on quite a few occasions to do a brewing, restaurant, and taproom operation. So this was a former car dealership. It takes time to make these things happen. Motorcycle. Harley Davidson. Let's forget. But with that being said, we have met with them multiple times. We have no formal building permit submittal. However, what a lot of people don't know is the company's undergoing a major expansion. So this is a company that was based actually out of Napomo. So the name kind of odd, but that's what it is. They are currently doing construction of a major brewery operation in Santa Maria, along with a separate tap room, and they're also doing a separate tap room in Paso. So that's a pretty large expansion in such a short amount of time for a company. But they are really excited, and again, their operation here is a little bit more complicated because it involves the brewery portion, it involves the tap room, it involves a restaurant, and it also involves a side little distillery on top of that. So getting in a retail store, and so getting through all these licensing issues with ABC and the state has been much more cumbersome than expected. So that has really been one of the major delays on this, but don't fret, we'll get through it. One thing that we rarely ever talk about outside of the halls of City Hall is our business advocate program. This is something actually directly born from the action plan. So what that is an early advocate for businesses to foster economic development. We help identify issues with property. So basically this works is someone comes in and they have an idea, they want to open up a new business here in the city. Rather than sit there and really try to be cumbersome about what hoops you have to jump through and really try to bore you to death and as well as shoot down your dreams because it's so much paperwork, we instead, what we do is we get a meeting with you and we ask that we meet you on site. We typically get a planner or a building official and fire if need be. And we all meet, we walk the site, we go over their vision, and we basically give them like a verbal list of what needs to get done in terms of if you want to turn the space to a restaurant, this is what you're going to have to do construction-wise. If you want to turn the space into a brewery, this is what needs to happen. These are the type of permits. Yes, it's an allowed use. No, it's not an allowed use. This is what your avenue is. And it's really walking through that process. We just finished up this process with Dead Oak. We actually met with them on several different sites before they settled on their Entrada site. And at the Entrada site, we met on site with their real estate broker themselves, and they walked through the vision. And as we were going through and opening up the back door and looking at that back patio, we realized, hey, this would be an awesome place to have some outdoor dining with a view of City Hall. And sure enough, that's what they're beginning to do. So we met with their architects, and all this is free. The only expenditure is our time. And so we meet with their architect, they bring in plans, and finally, you know, as the plans come through, we're all working on the same page to really reduce that red tape, streamline that process. I can't tell you how much the business advocate program is something we enjoy doing, we love doing, and we wish we had more good press about it. So I'm letting you know that it's a great program. Tell our friends about it. And we and this is something that we really try to do and strive to do with every single new business that potentially wants to relocate or expand here in the city. Permit streamlining, tight time frames, turnarounds for building permits in an expedient manner. That's been the way it's been for the last 5, 6, 7 years. It continues to be so. And again, we meet with applicants to remedy any building deficiencies. So what we've done over the last year now is when we have building plan checks in, rather than trying to go through a 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and yes, there have been projects that have gone through 8 plan checks, which is insane to think of, but it happens. We now, at plan check number 3, we now sit down, we do a meeting with the design professional and their design team, as well as our building officials and anybody else who's involved in the project that has some outstanding issues, and we get in a room and we try to work those out so that the third submittal is the last one, or sometimes it even goes into the 4th. This has been immensely helpful in some of our more cumbersome building permit projects. Common sense reform, the sign ordinance, we did a major 2016 work effort on that. So we have revamped the sign ordinance for better signage based on business needs rather than just random numbers that we threw out on a dartboard. I tend to think this is a better approach. And then also we had a land use definition update, so we amended the city's land use definitions to reflect our changing economic landscape. Rather than let it flounder in the 60s and 70s language, it's okay. We can try to branch out there and really try to update our own code to reflect our new economic realities. We also reorganized the code to make things logical, and we created a zoning handbook. So that's now available for purchase. It is on our website, and we are telling people to go to the zoning handbook, and they've enjoyed looking at it with all the lovely picture graphics. The final category is environmental stewardship. So this is something that we have to always balance with economic development and our goals, as well as balancing the environment. So expediting construction of local retail nodes is a big one. So again, that's why the Del Rio Road specific area, commercial area specific plan is really important, not only economically, but also environmentally, as it helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Again, moving forward with that ECR grant, we are a leader in solar permits. It's always a fun thing to say. We're the first in Central Coast to provide online permit submittal, so you're able to submit via email to us, and we get that turned around with you in about 48 hours. The city's in full compliance with AB 2188, and we were awarded with a Sunshot Solar Award for expediting and expanding our solar programs, and this has really been a kudos to our building department, who's done an excellent job on really setting up our solar program to be a leader and example for the rest of the municipalities on the Central Coast. And so with that, I'll open up to questions for either Phil or I.
Thank you. Excellent report. I know we all look forward to this one every year. Good job. Any questions for staff? Mr. Burbeau?
Were you just pointing to me, assuming I'd have questions?
Well, often.
Yeah, actually, I do. Ms. Castillo, thank you. So on these, the numbers which show we're doing very well relative to our regional housing needs assessment targets, do you have any information off the top of your head, because I understand this to be true, that other cities in the county do not do as well as we do in meeting those goals?
Yeah, we've looked the twofold. Typically, we've tried to do in the past years comparisons to where we're at with other cities. The problem this year is we were in competition for a grant, so we needed to get everything together. So we haven't really had time to pull those other additional stats. Now, comparatively speaking, San Luis Obispo has the brunt of units that they need to the city of, as well as the county take a brunt of those units for SOCOG for very low and low, and they have a really hard time just meeting them. They're pretty low in terms of the low teens. So again, at a percentage basis, we're doing pretty well.
Right. Yeah, it seems that we do well in the residential but our commercial activity is fairly minimal. And on the page where you listed all of the commercial activity, they're all basically remodels, no new construction. So it's exciting to see some of the projects you've mentioned. On the map of the Colony Square in the L-shaped lot, you made reference to the new owner, that one there. new owner wanting to move forward with the restaurant site. Which of those, you know, buildings, C1, C2, or B1, B2, which one of those would be the restaurant site?
There's discussion of reconfiguring that so it's not four separate buildings. It may only be two.
Okay.
And from what I understood, he was looking towards the one at the frontage of El Camino Real there where the parking lot is today, the unpaved parking lot.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. And the other question, towards the back of the staff report, there is the general plan policies and programs review attachment, which didn't seem we actually got into that too much. But I had a question on that. Are we – is that something – somebody else is going to address, or it just didn't need addressing? Because I do have a question on something.
Could you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
Well, towards the back of the report, of the staff report, there's the general plan policy and policies and program review attachment that's part of this staff report. We didn't get into that, but I did have a question on something in there.
And you can feel free to ask questions about it. Essentially, it's a policy overview of how we've either implemented or if we have ongoing issues with that policy and how we're moving forward. And
right. Well, I had noted in a discussion with the city manager this morning some things that maybe seem perhaps a little out of date, but they're relatively insignificant. But I do have a question on page 187 of the agenda, number 4 in the middle of the page. Where it says restrict truck traffic by ordinance to designated routes identified in a truck route diagram. And the reason I'm curious about that is the next agenda item or later in the meeting tonight, we're going to be talking about improvements, or not improvements, rehabilitation to a beat-up road on Santa road portion on Santa Barbara, which is heavily impacted, I believe, by truck traffic coming out of the quarry crossing Halcon Road and in, you know, which I guess the county prefers, but it beats the hell out of our city road, and here we are going to spend money on it. So I'm wondering, and perhaps this is a question for the Public Works Director, do we have a truck route diagram, and what is the city's, and maybe this is a question we can delay till the next agenda item, perhaps.
Why don't we take it then? Yes.
Okay.
So we'll give you a little time to prepare.
Sure.
Any questions from Ms. Moreno?
Let's see, on page, well, first of all, awesome. I love that advocate program. I mean, my thought has always been like, just, you know, sidle up alongside and how do we get this done? Like we're a team, we're all working on it together and you guys are doing that and just fabulous. So on page 129 of the agenda, and it's elsewhere, but we're saying that of the residential permits issued, 41% are new, are low and very low. But it looks like it's more closer to 60%. Am I reading that correctly?
No, you are reading that correctly. I'm just math impotent.
Okay. So this is somewhat of a theoretical question. And so our responsibility, just to be clear, is to have the zoning in place. So we have met and exceeded that. In terms of building, we're currently today not required to have it built. We just need to remove barriers and make it possible.
Exactly.
Okay. And again, this is probably theoretical. I kind of think of the water issue where for so long Atascadero has been, our whole city, very conservation-oriented with water. And then when California gets into a drought and the state decides to, you know, put restrictions and reductions in place, you know, everyone's kind of blanketed, and it felt almost like punishment, like we had done such a good job, and, well, it doesn't matter how good a job you did, you know, squeeze it even more. And so I'm curious, is there the potential that in us meeting and exceeding and doing so well, they look and say, oh, well, St. Louis can't do as well because they want to have all these regulations and charge everybody, and so therefore we're going to throw some of that Atascadero's way. Is there a fear of that?
No, it doesn't really work that way at all, and it's based on our population and what we can really accommodate, and that's a really good discussion that we're going to be having here soon with SLOCOG and what those numbers should be going forward. It's going to be interesting in 2 or 3 years what's going to really happen is this big surge of the multifamily units that we've been seeing over the last couple of years can't continue to happen because we just don't have the land to support it. We don't have the zoning to support it. So those things are going to level off, and we're going to be having a more difficult time meeting these numbers that you're seeing today. So what you're seeing in the last year or two is kind of a bump. It's kind of an anomaly, and that's not sustainable in terms of residential growth. And so I think that there's going to be an understanding of what we can accommodate and what sort of our share will be. And I don't think it's going to be bumped up just because we've been able to accommodate that and because other jurisdictions may have a more difficult time, whether it's resource-driven or whether it's general plan-driven.
And so do they use as a baseline the current, like in 2019 when it comes along, are they going to look at our RENA, like the actual allocation where they've said here's how many, or are they going to look at what we did and go from there?
They don't look at what we did. They look at what we could accommodate based on our general plan and zoning and based
that
on our
population.
That gives
me a little more comfort level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Just a comment. I really commend you for taking your action plan, aligning with our council goals, and just that alignment and the work you've done. It really is a path forward that's just amazing. All this economic development and just the work that you guys have accomplished, or actually staff, all staff, have accomplished in this area is just, I commend you. Good job. And also the quality of this report, too. I was just reading through and just thinking it's very professional, very well done. Very easy to read, just very good work. Thank you.
Some of these things will take years to really show up in the community in terms of the economic development, but we're getting there, and we're seeing some hints of the near future that we're going to see some really big things, some really good things. There's still hope for the Del Rio specific plan, and so I think that especially has tremendous potential, and we're working really hard to make sure something good goes in there.
A couple of questions and one comment. I noticed that we had 32% more permits in 2016 than 2015. That's quite remarkable that we did that. You're working very hard, obviously. And a question or two. You mentioned in the Del Rio Road Walmart area that the tentative map expires in June of 17, but there's talk of extending it. Could you explain that, please?
There's more than talk of extending it. We actually received yesterday the official request to extend the map. So that is happening. We are currently in discussions with the representatives for Walmart, and so there continues to be a discussion about where that's going to go and why they want to extend it and what's next. So I think there's still some unresolved discussion, but they are extending the map for now, which keeps the entitlements alive, which is good.
So I assume we're going to hear more about this later then.
Yes.
Thank you. And you mentioned Colony Square. There will be a restaurant site. Is this an individual or is this a corporation?
This is an individual. And he is wanting to actually do his own restaurant there. He's currently out of Santa Barbara right now, and he's purchased the property. And he's thinking about actually operating a restaurant on his own, not a corporation. So it would be a custom restaurant. And his discussion with me has been he's looking for something that really fills the niche in Atascadero, kind of a higher-end steakhouse kind of situation. He has the likings of, like, the Range and some other restaurants in this area and was really wanting to do that kind of a thing. I'm trying to get a meeting going with him here soon. He's been a busy guy. But now that the bridge project's starting up, we're going to be a little closer touch with him because we're actually going to be touching that property with the project. So I think that's going to spur him wanting to move forward.
We're always up for a good restaurant.
Yes.
Perfect.
Definitely.
And one question for you regarding the last sentence in your report that puzzled me. It says, there is currently increased speculation on conversions of non-residential land uses for residential use. Could you explain what you meant by that, please?
Yes. That's something that we've seen since the dramatic conversion of the Dove Creek parcels. Essentially, residential sells. There's confidence to sell residential. We have such a limited amount of residential land left over that the pressure continues for folks to want to speculate and therefore change the zoning on a commercial property so they can build residential units instead of doing the commercial.
So mainly pressure on commercial, not on open
space?
That's right.
And that's because a lot of the commercial parcels that we have are splintered, they're small, they're sandwiched in with residential. They're not big enough, not deep enough, not in the right location to have that really big commercial that's going to be that draw. So instead, this is the alternative. It may be difficult to rent or lease or sell small commercial spaces, but it's very easy to sell or lease or rent residential units no matter where you build them. So that's been the driver for the last few years, and I think that's been the driver behind us wanting to look at the El Camino Real study and to really put a curb on those rezoning efforts on a piecemeal effort until we can look at a much bigger picture to realize where we need to maintain those commercial nodes and where maybe in the future additional residential could be accommodated without really hurting our commercial supply, as has happened over the years.
So will this be covered in the El Camino Real corridor and study?
Yes.
Or someplace?
Yes.
Else?
Exactly. It will be covered in that study. And then as we move forward, we hope that we have a plan for really responding to the growth and needs while at the same time looking for where we can respond to expanding our commercial needs, make those bigger. Can we look at parcels today that are residential? For example, the parcel on the west side of Highway 101 at Del Rio, should that be a commercial property? It's now zoned residential. Are there other properties along the corridor that are zoned residential that can accommodate larger commercial uses, whether they're a commercial park, whether they're office park, whether they're business and professional, or whether they're a large retail use?
I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you feel that staff has sufficient direction from the council regarding policy in that regard?
I think so. But we're always willing to hear more input on that topic because I think that's essential for our community being successful and for moving forward. And we're continuing to work in that direction.
Thank you. I'm going to open it up for public comment now. Are there any members of the public that wish to speak on this topic? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public comment. And this is just a receive and file, correct, Michelle? Very good. Thank you. Well, let's move on then.
No, there is actually directing staff to turn it, so we do need a motion, please.
Okay, very good. So we need to submit the attached annual general plan and housing report to the state of California. Does that require a motion?
We do have it listed as directed, so we will need a motion for you to direct them.
Very good. I'll go ahead and make the motion that this be done. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
All right. Our next item is C2, Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehabilitation Construction Award. And this would be Mr. DeBar.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. This item is in regards to construction award for Santa Barbara Road. Santa Barbara Road is actually, there's two segments that we're looking at as part of this project, what we call Santa Barbara West and Santa Barbara East. Kind of obvious what side of the freeway that you're on. The red arrow there in the diagram is the west portion where it begins, and that connects up with the Tascadero Avenue, which was redone a few years back. It has nice condition and rideability condition. The blue aerial would be at San Antonio. So that is the county road, or that, parallel freeway road, that frontage road that goes along there and goes to the south. Just a little background. This section has some really heavy degradation due to trucks hauling from the quarry, as Councilmember Barbeau mentioned. And the west section is structurally sound, but it has severe raveling from environmental factors. So the rideability essentially is really bad on that. And I think we've all driven on these sections of road and are somewhat familiar with them. Both of these sections were combined into a single project for some efficiencies. On the CIP, which I'll show in a minute, they are actually separate projects meant to be in separate years. But staff felt like combining those into one project, one set of bidding documents and plans and specs, one process to, work with contractor and everything else. Both of these sections also require Caltrans encroachment permits, so that alone has, some significant efficiencies to put these together. And then there's also that inconvenience cost, I call them. The traveling public, the neighbors, everybody else. So, you can do this in one project, and, there's just those inconvenience costs that you can't really put monetary numbers on, but just kind of more the hassle, the irritation, things like that. So this project was bid back in August of last year, and bid proposals were open on September 22nd. We received four bid proposals ranging from $248,000 to $266,105. The lowest responsible bidder is Sousa Engineering Contracting for that low amount. And we were expecting bids to come in somewhere in between $225,000 and $275,000, just based on the work that was included. Sousa's bid was right in the middle of that. And we talked to Sousa about this and kind of searching for additional funding opportunities. Sousa was agreeable, as was the city, to honor their bid and wait, extend that out a few months until we had an opportunity to kind of look at some other funding opportunities. And really, they wouldn't be doing any work anyway, so they were okay with just holding off. Usually contractors at that time of year are very busy trying to finish up their work, and they really don't want to start new work typically in October. So this is a page out of the budget book, and it's a CIP, and I highlighted a couple areas there. So the yellow lines are Santa Barbara West and East. So Santa Barbara West is actually proposed for construction in fiscal year 2016-17. Santa Barbara East was actually a 2018-19 project, and you can see the amounts there. We're also proposing to, those combined amounts are roughly $170,000, $180,000. And so they are short, so we've proposed to find some other funding from the same funding source. These are local transportation funds that all these proposed funding sources would be coming from or funded from. So the blue line there is actually San Lucas Road landslide repair. San Lucas Road is roadway off El Monte, way out on the northwest part of town near Ascension Ranch. It's a real short, narrow road that a landslide occurred, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then that other green line is actually a program that we have budget $50,000 for, just for various improvements that we run into that are in between maintenance or rehab that come up. And that fund is actually it's a roadway traffic safety improvement program, we call it. And that fund has not been had any expenditures drawn from it thus far. And again, it's an LTF funding source. So a little bit about that San Lucas Road landslide. Occurred in early 2011. The road is a short dead-end roadway that actually ends in the municipal boundaries, the city limits. It actually only serves two existing residential driveways. And kind of in the middle of this short roadway segment, the landslide occurred, and it created a single lane for about 100 feet. There's only one driveway beyond this point, so really the landslide is only affecting one residential property. And we've really been monitoring this, and this project got added to the CIP shortly after the landslide occurred. We were kind of thinking at the time, we're going to need to do something about this, and but it's actually stabilized, and we really haven't seen any other further movement from that landslide at all. So that's one of the reasons we're recommending don't touch it if it's not broken and there's only one property beyond that. So this is just the aerial photo. The landslide occurred there where that blue star is. You can see on the top that's El Monte Road. If you go up to the upper left that goes up to Ascension Ranch. The driveway for that one property is where the red arrow is. And the city limits actually just dead end right there, right after that driveway. So kind of where the tree line is the county. So you can see this doesn't, you know, $90,000 to do a landslide repair that may not even be enough to do it in the first place, but only serving one property. We felt that it was probably better money spent on Santa Barbara. I did talk to this resident that does live where this red arrow is earlier this afternoon and explain, you know, what we're planning on doing, and he is fine with it. He didn't seem to have any issues at all, and we'll continue to dialogue if he sees anything happening up there or any changes, or if he feels like we need to do a little bit more traffic control to, you know, one lane ahead or something like that. The fiscal impact for this project, with contingencies and those other admin, engineering, legal fees, is expected to be $318,300, which would be offset from those other funding sources. As I mentioned, $120,000 from the original West segment, $58,480 from the East segment. That St. Lucas landslide repair was budgeted for $89,820, and then $50,000 from that roadway traffic safety improvement program, which kind of balances it out. And really, that $50,000, that kind of matches up to the construction contingencies. So, you know, we're hoping we don't need to use that. We've talked to Sousa Contracting, and they're really anxious to just hit this thing, get it banged out, and get out of town. So we like that. We like to hear that from contractors often. You know, they want to kind of work as it works out, but they're really interested in just getting this project done. So there's a few recommendations tonight, and I can read through these unless the city clerk wants to, but I'll read through. Award a construction contract for $248,000 to Sousa Engineering Contracting, Inc. for the Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehab Project. Project number is C2016R04, bid number 2016-005. And authorize the city manager to execute a contract with Sousa Engineering Contracting, Inc. in the amount of $248,000 for the construction of the Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehabilitation Project, and authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate $58,480 in local transportation funds for the Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehabilitation Project, and authorize the Director of Administrative Services to reallocate $89,820 of the local transportation funds from the San Lucas Road Landslide Repair fiscal year 15-16 to the Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehabilitation Project, and authorize the Director of Administrative Services to reallocate up to $50,000 of local transportation funds from the Roadway Traffic Safety Improvements Program from fiscal year 15-16 for the Santa Barbara Road Pavement Rehabilitation Project. And finally, authorize the Director of Public Works to file a notice of completion with the county recorder upon successful completion of the project. And after that tongue-twisting recommendation, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. DeBar. Good report. I know Councilmember Burbeau had some questions in particular about the gravel trucks and so forth that travel on the road and deteriorate the condition. Would you like to go ahead?
Sure. Thank you. As I indicated, and you specifically mentioned in the staff report on page 215 of the agenda, that the east section of Santa Barbara Road has was added due to the pavement deterioration caused from heavy trucks, heavy use by trucks hauling material from quarries near Santa Margarita Farms and Rocky Canyon Road. And then, as I indicated in the previous agenda item, there's a little verbiage in there that says, you know, we have a truck route ordinance, or we have a But it seems to me that, you know, we have an activity that's occurring in the county, and the county, you know, apparently wants them to use Halcon Road when they can have the dry water crossing in place, and that dumps all this heavy traffic that's wrecking our road, and we're going to fix it, and now their trucks are going to go right back to beating the hell out of it again. What latitude, if any, does the council have to control the use of that particular route by heavy trucks?
That's a really good question. Any public road, you cannot prohibit vehicles from using except in the event that they're overweight, over-dimensional, or oversized. You know, that's the only way that you can really prevent, you know, any kind of vehicle from using it. Now, I have not looked at kind of what the traffic index of Halcon and that route is. Halcon, I know, is a pretty beefy road, but I can look into that and see kind of what loading that would require, and if it's the trucks are using it that are much heavier, we can look at that. But the other thing with the truck route, the truck routes are usually established because a roadway might be a heavier duty roadway, or it's, you know, wider, some other neighboring roads, you know, you don't want them to use a local road or a residential road necessarily, so you set up a truck route or something along those lines, and maybe the city attorney or the police chief want to weigh in on this, but that's kind of basically what it is. But the county has somewhat incentivized these trucks from using it, you know, just with their agreement when they allowed these quarries to go in.
Well, and that was my understanding. They've actually incentivized these trucks to use this particular route. And, you know, that's – and I don't have any, you know, any particular objection to them doing that, except it's costing us money and without – in any particular benefit might be going to the county, because the county's deriving revenue on either a per-truck or per-something basis of that quarry traffic. So they're deriving the revenue and we're deriving the cost, and that seems fundamentally unfair to the city. Okay, so yeah, I would very much like, you know, to see staff look into that issue, because, like I said, we fix it, and, you know, in 10 years we'll be back here again because the trucks beat the hell out of the road. The other question is, on page 216 of the agenda and in the staff report, in the second paragraph, you talk about pavement conditions have deteriorated to the point of full section removal and replacement is required by Caltrans, and a Caltrans encroachment permit has been obtained for this area, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it talks about depth, the structural section depth calculated based on Caltrans requirements. And due again to the heavy truck volume, the required asphalt pavement section is significantly thicker. And I don't know if it's required or is it just the sensible thing to do because these heavy trucks are using it. But my question is, how far does Caltrans, where does Caltrans' responsibility end? I assume at the top of the ramp somewhere. And then beyond that, how far does their requirements or their rules or their jurisdiction, however you'd phrase it, extend, you know, onto the city road?
Correct. So those on and off ramps, those intersections are within Caltrans right away. And for instance, in this picture actually up on the screen, probably a little, that's looking westbound, and that's a stop sign coming up to that, I guess, southbound interchange. And actually Caltrans right away probably extends maybe, you know, I'm going to guess halfway to that orange sign there.
So maybe where that... There you can see a line where the road gets rougher, maybe extended
yeah,
to there.
Pretty much. That's okay. Probably a good indication.
So they're right so there actually fix that portion then, or maintain that portion?
We have my understanding is that, and maybe the city manager or city attorney maybe know this a little bit better, but we have a requirement to maintain that up to the bridge deck. We don't do anything on the on and off ramps. They tell us, okay, you know, we're going to issue this encroachment permit to you, but we're going to tell you how you're going to repair it. Much like a utility contractor that wants to dig in, a gas line down El Camino Real, we tell them what the requirements for, you know, the restoration of that is going to be because they're in our right-of-way.
Got it. Okay. So they impose the requirement out to wherever that, let's say, that line in the picture.
Correct. There. And that's okay. Honestly, that's kind of where a lot of the cost, you know, increases came from was the, that deeper section, the full replacement of a lot of that pavement at the on and off ramps.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So a couple questions for you, Nick, is with Eagle Ranch coming on, and of course, you know, my first thought is we're fixing this road and there's going to be improvements most likely with this project. How are we moving forward confidently at this point spending money when we know that somewhere down the line this could very well be covered by that project?
Well, this roadway segment, it's not part of the mitigation for Eagle Ranch, and they do have some mitigation measures with regard to further up on Atascadero with, you know, adding, you know, a separated multi-purpose path and bike lanes and fixing some of those deficiencies. But this particular section of road is not part of it. Now, one of the big mitigation factors with Eagle Ranch is a requirement to redo this interchange. That is, like, big dollars. I mean, we're talking, you know, another Del Rio, you know, $12 to $15 million requirement that they'll have to do. But this particular section in between the interstate and the entrance to Eagle Ranch, which is kind of up around the corner there, up onto Atascadero Avenue, they're not required to do anything mitigation-wise.
Okay. And my other question is, on the San Lucas Road landslide funds that are going to be reallocated, is there a contingency plan in case something does happen?
Well, we keep monitoring that, and, if we've had a couple other, you know, hillsides that have been sloughing off this year, but nothing, you know, that has undermined roads. Although in one case, I guess, out on San Marcos, we had an incident out near Los Altos, and that's it's something we're pursuing with the FEMA money and that emergency funding that they're going to be, you know, rolling out. And I know the Director Rangel has been involved in that, went to the briefing the other day. It looks like we have some real opportunity for some good, you know, projects that might come out of that. Back to your question, we just monitor it and you know, I guess we'll have to deal with it when it happens. But, you know, right now, after 6 years, it seems to have stabilized. And, you know, sometimes if it ain't broke, don't mess with it or don't fix it.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with the if it's not broke, don't fix it. I just want to, in case something, I could just see, like tomorrow, the road gives out, and you have a homeowner who can't get back and forth their property. I just am, you know, kind of thinking, you know, the what if, that's all. So,
right. No, and I certainly think about those things all the time, too, and, you know, look at, okay, if this did happen, what are some other options for them? And it looks like there might be some other opportunity, maybe with some neighboring properties where they could get in and out, but, you know, ultimately we'd want to try to restore that and get the right-of-way back in shape.
Okay. Thank you.
So on that road, it looks like it, just even with the storms this year, that it survived as is from 2011. So
it did.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like, you know, what's the contingency yet? It's a small enough number, yet also a big enough number when you think it's one property. And, you know, gratefully, the property owner understands. And so I commend you for kind of thinking in this way of, okay, let's be creative with the limited funds we have, and everybody's amenable. So, yeah, thanks.
The property owner actually had a lot of questions for the Santa Lucia Bridge. Actually, he was much more interested in how we're coming along with that project.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And a question once again about the quarries. I know the one near Santa Margarita Farms comes down El Camino heading north and then turns onto Santa Barbara Road. But Rocky Canyon is across the river, correct?
Correct.
And when this washes out periodically in the winter storms, don't they have to have some kind of permit to put that back in?
I would think so. And I'm not sure what they actually have that's out in the county. But they probably have to have something with, you know, water quality and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Fish and Game and all these others. I know I'm kind of blown away, too, that they can actually just do that.
And I just wondered if there might be an opportunity to renegotiate something with them in particular, because they're obviously causing quite a bit of damage to our streets.
Right.
And whether that's something staff could look into, if there is a permit and there's any negotiation that they have to put in some money to help keep that road up.
And I'm not sure, you know, when those quarries were approved, you know, if the city commented or how all that went. I mean, that...
Well, I think the quarries can go on. It's just the roadway that might be the kicker when it washes out. Here's our opportunity, I would think.
Right.
No, just a thought.
I've heard rumors of what that deal might have been, and I haven't been able to verify it, but, the incentivized is on a scale of 5.
Okay, thank you very much. I know that was a little off the wall there, too. No. All right, are there any questions from the public? Because I'd like to open this up to public comment. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the public comment portion. And do I have a motion on this?
I would move that we adopt staff's recommendation. I don't know if it's necessary to read all of these, but, you know, staff's recommendation is to award the construction contract, to authorize the city manager to execute the contract, and to authorize the director of administrative services to appropriate funds as indicated in the staff report, and to authorize the director of public works to file a notice of completion upon completion of the project.
I second that.
Okay, motion by Mr. Bourbeau, second by Mr. Sturtevant. Roll call vote, please.
Could I interrupt for just a minute? You were summarizing the staff's recommendations.
Correct.
In the motion. So just to make sure we didn't miss anything, perhaps you could add to the motion and any of the other recommendations in the staff report. I wasn't sure if you touched every one of them.
I believe I did touch
okay.
every one of them.
All right.
Well, when I said authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate funds as indicated in the staff report, and three of the numbers were various appropriations. So essentially I was just trying to be brief and recommending, without reading verbatim, but verbatim recommending staff's recommendation.
Yeah, I wasn't recommending you had to read it verbatim. I was just, because I was listening to what you were saying, and I just wasn't quite sure if every base had been touched.
But recommending we adopt all 6 of staff recommendations as written.
That's very clear. Is the second okay with this?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Let's go ahead with that roll call vote then.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Council announcements and reports. Any? Yes, Ms. Moreno?
So I just wanted to talk about Dancing with Our Stars was this past weekend, and there are 7 nonprofits that raised money and benefited from it. The votes and sponsorships totaled over $160,000, which is pretty amazing. The silent auction, another $10,000. So the grand champion winner, the biggest fundraiser, was the Greyhound Foundation. They're developing a mentoring program that's going to be high school students mentoring 6th graders. Pretty exciting. And they raised over $50,000. Echo was in 2nd place, and they were right around $35,000, if I remember correctly, and Library in 3rd place with over $18,000. So pretty great effort there. And let's see, I think... If I have to think about it, that's it.
Any other committee reports? Or well, not committee reports, excuse me. Any other council announcements? Okay, very good. And I don't want to kick the hornet's nest, but I know that our police chief has been working hard to oppose SB 54 and wondered if it might be helpful if the council were to put a letter into your file to send along.
Yes, I have contacted our local representation to voice opposition. We've also been talking at the police chief's level to voice some of our opposition. I think probably best to direct council efforts towards our representation and make our voices heard at the Sacramento level, if that's what we so choose. Many of the stipulations that are to be included in SB 54 are policies and practices that our department already follows. We have a Lexapol policy manual. They provide us with the most up-to-date laws, rules, and best practices and how to deal with those kinds of issues. And so we feel that we are very appropriate in how we deal with these kinds of issues, and that this law is typically just an overreach and unnecessary.
Thank you. Let's move on to committee reports. Let's start with Council Member Burbeau.
I did attend, since our last meeting, the Homeless Services Oversight Council meeting, and being my first one, found it interesting. Nothing specific to report, other than I guess it's worth noting that the council did agree to recommend or send a letter to the Board of Supervisors asking them to consider various actions to support more affordable housing.
Thank you. Ms. Moreno?
At the EVC, we have a representative from Alaska Airlines come speak to us. They are beginning service April 13th to Seattle out of San Luis Obispo. It's really interesting. She went through the whole matrix on how they made the decision, and this market is definitely underserved, and they saw that. And in comparison to other markets, it was just really, you know, a no-brainer as far as they were concerned. They are actually the fifth largest airline in the U.S., and they are the largest carrier here on the West Coast, in the West Coast market. And once they're successful with this route, they would look at adding more. So that was really good news to hear.
Thank you. Mr. Sturdivant?
Sure. Well, this Thursday I'll be attending the League of California Cities Policy Committee, MIC Committee for Community Housing and Economic Development, and Councilmember Burbeau. The entire agenda is on affordable housing legislation that we're going to be looking at. So that is a hot topic this year in the state of California. We will also get a briefing on the state and the status of the state or the state of the state. So that'll be interesting. So I'll be able to we'll brief you when I return.
And where is that held?
It'll be in Ontario.
Very good. Thank you for attending that. I attended the Air Pollution Control District, and we're beginning the hiring process to replace the executive director towards the end of the year. And so I volunteered to sit on the hiring process committee. I will report into you anything that is of interest. The Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO, will be meeting next Wednesday, and they'll be covering the Creston El Pomar Water District. And this will be immediately following the Board of Supervisors vote on whether the county will be in the GSA for the water districts, and so it may affect whether they're formed or not, because it may or may not be a duplication of services. I'll keep you posted on that one. And design review is meeting tomorrow, and we'll be going over La Plaza. We'd welcome any of the public that would like to weigh in on this. It's a big project, and the look of it will be very important for the future of Atascadero. That's it for me. With that said, is there any individual determination or actions from staff? Seeing none, meeting adjourned.